But it's something I've wanted to do since I was 6 years old. And I just feel like if I have any talent at all, it's just remembering what it was like to be 6 years old.
That's Jan Brett, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Jan Brett is the best-selling author and illustrator of over 40 picture books. Her books have been chosen as Best Children's Books of the Year by The New Yorker, Parents, Red Book, and others. And she joins us to talk about her latest picture book, The Christmas Sweater. Jan, welcome to Conversations.
Hey, thank you so much.
Well, we're going to talk about your latest picture book for Christmas, The Christmas Sweater. But before we talk about the story, tell us about the inspiration for this book.
We got lost in Montana. Now, I live in Boston. We were on a trip, and we were at one of these wilderness lodges that was miles from anywhere, just a dirt road. And it was in the winter with lots of snow on the ground. We decided to go for a snowshoe hike. And as we set off in the afternoon, it's December, remember, gets dark early, it was snowing lightly. And as we traveled through the forest, it started snowing more and more until finally it was coming down as if somebody was on a cloud above us, dumping shovelfuls of snow on our heads, and which was snowy. But then all of a sudden, we were going to follow our snowshoe tracks back to the lodge, and they were obliterated. There was not even a dent to where we walked. And so there was a moment of panic. All of us said it was this way, it was that way. There were three of us. My daughter, who was in the Marine Corps, had a plan B. She had brought her GPS. So that's how we got back. But that night, you know, cozy in my bed, I started getting not a panic attack, but just like a little concern that we could have been in a real trouble out in the middle of the woods. And I started thinking of getting lost stories. And I remember thinking about Hansel and Gretel, and they got into trouble because they left breadcrumbs and birds came and got them. Then I remember the Greek myth of Ariadne, Theseus, and the Minotaur, where Ariadne gave Theseus a gold ball of string that wound its way into the labyrinth where the monster Minotaur lived. And then after he vanquished it, the Minotaur, the bad, monstery Minotaur, it let him back out. Next in this line of interesting jigsaw puzzles was my sister gave me a Christmas sweater. It was very ornate, and it had big gold buttons, and I did not like it because I have more and more simple kinds of things. And but I love my sister, and so I took a few of the ornaments off and painted the buttons black, and it got to be my favorite. I loved it. It was cozy and warm, and somehow those three things, getting lost, this ball of string from the Greek myths, and the Christmas sweater led to this story. I thought maybe that could happen to a little pug dog who got a Christmas sweater but didn't like it. Now, if you've ever seen a pug, they're very distinguished. They look like they would have good taste if they were people. And they were very elegant, even the way they stand. Elegant, elegant, elegant. And I thought maybe it could be given a Christmas sweater that it did not like. And I would have a solution for that.
So now we have the story of the Christmas sweater where you combined all those elements. So tell us about the plot. What are people going to find here?
Okay, well, when they go for a walk, I'll read that first page because it kind of sets that up. Shall I do that?
Please do.
Okay. When Yaya told me she was knitting a special sweater for Ari's first birthday, Ari's the dog, I couldn't wait to see it. But the moment Ari unwrapped it on Christmas morning, she sniffed it once and stepped away. So Yaya would not have hurt feelings. Now, this is the little boy Theo talking. I quickly unwrapped my gift and cried, "A pair of snowshoes, just what I've always wanted." I added excitedly, "I'll snowshoe to Echo Lake right now, and Ari can come too, staying cozy in a Christmas sweater." Well, as they go out the door, they find out the pug is too small to get through the snow. When she jumps out the front door, it's over her head. So that's when Theo puts her in his backpack. And as they travel on this trail, all snow everywhere, to Echo Lake, he ducks down under the snow-laden branches, and a little bit of the sweater gets caught in the branches and the sweater starts to unravel. Now, all the knitters out there are saying, oh, I remember when that happened to me. Because when you're knitting, all you need is just like one little pull. You know, this is before the sweater's completed, and then it just unravels. And this is what happens. But I don't tell anybody that happens all the way through the book. As a matter of fact, they go through beautiful snowy scenes, and everything is all great until they get to Echo Lake, and the snow comes down a little bit at first, and then as if there's people up in the clouds dumping snow, obliterates their tracks. So that's what I was remembering from our trip to Montana. And they do make it back because Ari sees his little gold wings sticking out of the snow. And if you look at the book, the Christmas sweater, there's a little gold angel that is like a big button on the top. And that's what Ari finds. Ari is the dog. And they pull it up and the red string is attached and they make it back home.
And as you say, you don't tell them that it's unraveling, but you do show it. So if they're paying attention, they'll catch on to that.
And if they're really paying attention, they'll see in the borders that these magpie birds that are messing around in the snow with something gold on the side panels. And what they're doing is a magpie, like a raven or a crow, is very intelligent. But they have the added behavior of they love shiny objects and pick them up and bring them to their nests. So they're picking up all these little doodads from the sweater. They end up on the town Christmas tree. So when Theo the boy gets back and has a reunion with Yaya, they hear a lot of commotion by the town square, and that's where they find the Christmas tree covered with all the ornaments. And all the magpies are there too, which is, by the way, a very fun bird to draw because they're so pretty.
That's one thing you do so well in your books. It's filled with lots of intricate detail. And as you point out, if they're paying attention to the sides and what you're presenting in the pictures, they're getting clued in on what's happening in this story before the characters in the story know what's going on.
That's what I loved about my childhood books, is when they had a little bit of a detail sense of, which gives it a sense of place. You can kind of immerse yourself in the story, and pretty soon the world around you disappears and you get involved with your book. And I just remember that so well. 6, 7 years old, we were read to a lot, but our teachers at school gave us good books to read. My special favorite was Beatrix Potter because she did that exact same thing. She's always been my idol. And she also used a few big words, which I also like to use, you know, in context so you can understand. But I used to feel so proud about knowing, like I think in Peter Rabbit, the sparrows implored Peter to exert himself. I said, oh, exert. Well, I guess that must mean do something really with intention. Well, I wouldn't have thought that, but I wouldn't have said intention when I was a kid, but now I'm saying it. You know what I mean?
This is a picture book, so it's geared toward young readers or pre-readers even. They're being read to by parents or other adults in their life. So do you also kind of keep that adult audience in mind as well, since they're doing the reading?
No, I really don't. I just have this little world that I get move into that I don't, you know, I write it in longhand. I will then put it on the computer so I can send it to my editor so she can edit it. And we'll go through a couple of drafts, but it's all very interior. The only time is like I might, after the book is out and people will tell me what things about it, then I'll kind of not note that down in my mind. But it's something I've wanted to do since I was 6 years old. And I just feel like if I have any talent at all, it's just remembering what it was like to be 6 years old. I would be discriminating about my reading. If it looked like it was dumbed down or was too simple, I would not like it. But if it was a cartoon, I mean, cartoons can be very sophisticated, and I can appreciate, you know, it's almost like poetry, very simple lines meaning a great deal. And that's not my style, but I did appreciate it. It was more the intelligence level that is being put out there by the author that I was really react to. But, you know, it was kind of, when I think back, I only read horse books until I was in seventh grade. I was like one of these horse craze kids. But maybe that intensity of learning to draw horses really well helped me later to know that you had to achieve a certain level. I think that's the hardest thing for kids to understand, that when you're an artist, you are always saying, this isn't any good, and let me change this, and let's get it a little bit better, and just always reassessing. And, you know, when I do a book, I never want to even look at it for a little while, because I will see these glaring, there wouldn't be a mistake, but I wish I might have done it another way. And I have plenty of time to do that. It's just with hindsight, you kind of say, oh, maybe that was not a good idea. Maybe that was a good idea. So those will all go in the store box, and hopefully the next book will be better.
As you know, most picture books are written by an author, and then they have an illustrator that does the work. But you do both. So you feel like that sort of gives you a special advantage in putting together your books?
Oh, absolutely. Because it's a world. It's a world. And then I can change it and tweak it. And I think one of my big problems is I don't have enough of intensity or suspense in my books. So I can look and say, okay, I've got to go back and put that suspenseful thing in there, because I'm the writer, so I can do that. And then it could have worked the other way around, where this writing might be a little bit flat. I can take things out and just show it in the pictures. So I can be very deliberate about what I'm writing. But, you know, I have all to thank. My first editor was Houghton Mifflin. His name was Walter Lorraine. And he said, you know, Jane, you'll have a better chance of being published. He did like my artwork. This is what I went in with my portfolio as a young person and at museum school in Boston. And he said, if you write the story, you'll get a better chance of being published, because we have to find someone to match you. It might take a while. And he knew I was like very ambitious about getting books published. And he said, you know, there's only like 10 plots. It's just the way you tell them. It's like, you can't go home again, or there's something funny about me, but then it turns out to be a superpower. And so this one, I guess, is the lost and found kind of thing. And the things going wrong that turn out to be right. So the Christmas sweater was unloved, but it turned out to save the day.
You do a special promotion for your books where you get on a bus and you travel all around. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, that I can thank my publisher for. They know that I like to go to some of the places that aren't totally accessible by plane. So in the 20 years ago, we used to go to a big city and then do hubs off that city, you know, within like driving distance. Now the bus can go to places that are smaller cities that have readers. And you have little pockets all over the country of, I don't know whether it's the teachers or there's universities. I have no idea, but those will be places that we'll go. And we get emails, and used to get paper mail, and would keep track of where, I mean, this is just Jan and Joe, me and my husband, would keep track of where we're getting this mail, and would suggest to the publisher, but they choose where I'm going. So it's a kind of lot of ideas about how, where we go. Partially, they want to have a store that is going to want to have a signing. It's a lot of work. And the store gets, you know, mobbed by a whole bunch of people, and business as usual does not happen, or it sort of does, but I'm there with doing my talk and stuff. It's really fun for me because it's a really isolated profession. I'm here by myself. Our kids are grown up. I have my husband, but and my chickens, but that's it. And it's so nice to hear the kids. They bring me pictures. I had some amazing illustrations that I thought, oh my gosh, this is better than I could do. You know, you get older, you lose that pizzazz, that like, I don't care what it looks like because I'm drawing it and that's it. That's the story. Whereas I'm kind of always editing. They're just wonderful. And the kids are great. You know, so they vary. Some of them just, you know, what's your favorite animal, dog? And some of them are like, oh, my favorite animal is the Brazilian anteater. It's just great to talk to them. It always makes me smile.
Well, congratulations on this Christmas book. Good to have it out there. But what's next for you?
Oh, I have the best story. It's about a kitten that it learns to fly. It's stolen off a little girl's porch by an owl when she looks the other way and she's supposed to be watching it. And she sees it fly to the top of this giant tree. And then she tries to get it to come back. But in the meantime, the little kitten, who looks just like one of the little owlets from this barred owl, learns how to fly because there's a family of flying squirrels in the same tree. So whenever the mother owl goes off hunting, the flying squirrels are all around flying, and the kitten's observing, and that's how it gets down. And the best part is, it's my hometown as a setting, Hingham, Massachusetts. And this tree is the second largest in Massachusetts. And it's like a character in the book. And every time we'd go, when I was a little girl, every time we'd go on away on vacation, we'd always go and make sure the tree was okay. You know, for there had been a storm. It's huge. It's a sycamore. It's beautiful bark. So I got somebody with a drone to take pictures of it from the, you know, all these angles that I couldn't do because I can't fly.
Do you have a title for the book?
Yeah, it's called Fly Baby. But you know what? I don't have a kitten. You know, we travel too much and we're just a little bit worried about that. So I'm going to have to borrow people's kittens and draw them. But, you know, that happens a lot of times. I mean, I've drawn a muskox, tiger. There's a lot of ones I can't actually own. But I did own a hedgehog for years, and we had white rabbit that we're getting another rabbit now. Our rabbit just passed away, sadly. That rabbit was in about 6 or 7 books.
Well, we'll look forward to Fly Baby, but meanwhile, there's this new Christmas book, The Christmas Sweater, by Jan Brett. Jan, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Well, I really thank you for talking about my Christmas sweater book. It took a year to do, and well, I put a lot of love in it, and so nice to feel like it's appreciated by you. Thank you.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.